Hey, this is Josh with Inside Selling, a podcast about selling without selling your soul, where I explore how you can sell without being salesy, manipulative, or gross. Hey, have you ever listened to someone explain something to you and you had absolutely no idea what the heck they were talking about? Or maybe you've tried to explain something to someone and they just didn't get you. The ability to explain things in ways that make people care is a good skill to have no matter what you do, because if people are confused by your message, they won't act, whether that's selling a product or a service, and they'll just check out and their eyes will glaze over you. That is why I am super excited to groove with today's guest. His name, Harry Gottlieb, and he is one of the best explainers I know. Harry is best known as the creator of the quiz-based party game You Don't Know Jack, which grossed over $100 million. He's also led the team that invented a product called Alex that's helped more than, get this, 10 million employees better understand their insurance options in a way that's simple and also makes them smile. I first met Harry when I was actually a client and later had the privilege of working with him at Jellyvision. Harry, thank you so much for being on the show today, my friend.
It's a pleasure to be here, Josh.
So, Harry, let's start with this. Why do you think it is so difficult for people to explain things? What's going on?
Well, I think to successfully explain things, you really have to have a certain kind of empathy. And what I mean by that is, you really need to be thinking about what is going on in the head of the person that you're trying to explain something to. You need to be listening through their ears. And if you're the one doing the explaining, you're the expert. And they're the ones who are the beginner of whatever it is that you're talking about. But as the expert, you have to kind of maintain this beginner's mind so that you're speaking in ways that make sense to them. So like that's really like the first thing, is that you've got to be able to shed all of your expertise and your fluency in whatever it is that you're talking about and realize that the person in front of you doesn't have that. And so you're speaking their language.
Which is very difficult because, and you know this, Harry, there's a cognitive bias known as the curse of knowledge. If you're so close to a topic and you know it really well, you're an expert on this topic, it's very difficult to detach yourself and put yourself in the shoes of other people that don't know the topic. So that's a really a tough thing to do, especially for entrepreneurs. And also, Harry, what I've seen also is a lot of people have just never been taught how to explain. It's something we all take for granted. Harry, I'm sure you've gotten messages and you've seen things where people really knew the topic, but you didn't quite understand what they were talking about.
Yes, and so I would ask a lot of questions until I did.
So what I'd like to do, Harry, is kind of go through like some ideas that people can have in their arsenal, because I get this all the time, right? I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, and I ask them what they do, and they start saying things like, I have an end-to-end platform and a scalable thing and a cross this and a architecture that, and my eyes glaze over, like the students did from the Ferris Bueller movie. And it plagues many entrepreneurs and many people that are just trying to explain their products. We see it on websites. We see it on LinkedIn. And so if we start from the beginning, Harry, and we have a complicated topic, what's sort of the first thing that someone can keep in mind to shed that curse of knowledge and start to explain things in ways that are maybe easier to understand?
Well, you begin by not explaining anything. You begin by asking questions. You begin by, I mean, obviously, if you're creating media that's going to get broadcast out to a lot of people, that's a whole other can of worms. But so in a sales situation where you're talking to someone one-on-one, you have the benefit of being live. And so the first thing is ask questions, and including questions about what they know and what they don't know. And even more important than that, understanding why they're on the phone with you in the first place, right? Like what is the pain that they might want to be solving for that you could potentially help them with? That's really the first thing. Because if you go into some big explanation of something and your audience doesn't care, then you're wasting your time and their time. And it's also possible by asking questions that they might care, but they're not going to care unless the way that you are phrasing your explanation is in the context of what matters to them. So like the first thing you need to do is understand your audience.
I love that. Let me put you on the spot, Harry. So let's say you had to explain to me what Alex is. And let's say that I'm a prospective customer potentially, or maybe you just met me at a networking event and I bump up to you and I say, hey, Harry, I noticed that you're from Jelly Vision. I know you guys from Alex. You know, what I've heard of Alex, but I don't exactly know what it is. Let me hear how that would go. Let's pretend you and I are having this conversation, as you put it. Let's role play it a little bit just so listeners can get a sense of how you think.
Sure. So Josh, do you pick out the insurance in your household, like kind of select the medical insurance and choose your benefits? Is that you or is that somebody else?
Yeah, that's me. I do that every year.
And how's the process? Like, how is that for you when you're doing that? Is that something that you feel confident about, that you like doing?
I certainly don't like doing it. And sometimes I don't understand a lot of the stuff either. It's sometimes I have multiple, lots of choices, and there's sometimes terminology I don't quite get.
Like if I say like the word coinsurance, does that mean anything to you?
I've heard of it and I'd be embarrassed, but I don't exactly know what that is. Not specifically, right. No.
Like copay and maximum out of pocket and, you know, individual deductibles, and it's so fun. So, so the thing that we do with Alex is rather than have you figure all that stuff out on your own, Alex is an online program that asks you questions like, how many people are in your family? Do you have kids? How often do you see a specialist? Are you taking any prescription medication? In a very conversational way and collect some of this data from you about how you use the medical system. We then take that information and throw it into an algorithm, and an algorithm is just a fancy way of saying a computer program that does a whole bunch of math for you, takes that and imagines that you are using the medical system for each of the possible health insurance options that you have, right? And then calculates out what your total out-of-pocket spending will be, which includes your premium, what you pay for the insurance, plus what you'll be spending on bills during the course of the year to see which one is going to be less expensive for you, but also serving some of your needs. Because sometimes it's not just costs that you're concerned about. There are other things that you might be concerned about with the health insurance. And so it does that and kind of does the math for you and identifies which one makes most sense, and then can explain the plan for you. So it can explain things like coinsurance, and it can explain things like maximum out of pocket, but specifically in the context of how your personal plan works, so that you don't need to understand insurance in general, because that doesn't matter to you. What you might want to know is how your particular plan works, and that's what it does.
And scene. Okay, so one thing that you did there, Harry, and I want to talk a little bit about this, is, and you mentioned this before, you're starting with something that's known or some context to the other person. So you started off asking me a question about whether I'm responsible for selecting the benefits in my household. If you were to explain another topic, I think one of the key tips here is to start with prior knowledge. Start with something that somebody already knows or that they can relate to, that you can then ladder your thing back to. There's a really great graphic done by User Onboard that explains the difference between features and benefits, which is often something that trips people up. But rather than launching into an explanation of features and benefits, they start off with a graphic. And they start off with a graphic of Mario Brothers, which everyone has seen before. And so you have Mario on the left-hand side, and then you have Mario jumping on a flower, which everyone has seen before. And then you have that flower turning into a fireball, and that fireball is the thing that lets him kill the monster. And then they connect that. Mario is like your customer. The flower is the thing you sell. And the thing that you sell that makes someone do better is the fireball. So you're selling fireballs, not flowers. And so by starting with something familiar, you're able to bridge that and connect that to something new. And that's exactly what you did, Harry. I think you kind of contextualized your description around the questions you were asking me at the beginning.
Well, and importantly, identify that it's an actual pain point for you. Because right. if you tell me, when I asked, you know, how's the process of selecting your health insurance for you, if you'd said, you know what, I'm a total nerd and I love it. I get out the spreadsheets and I do all the, well, suddenly my product isn't really valuable for you. So I might talk about it, you know, that, if you'd said that, I'm like, oh, that's really interesting. Do you feel like a lot of people are like that? Or you think you're kind of like the odd, you know, an oddball, if you're somebody who's a gatekeeper, a buyer. But, you know, it's also like, are you a person who's actually experiencing the pain?
That's a great point. I was actually at a networking event once, and a CEO of a sales tech company walked up to me, and I asked him what he did. And rather than launching into an explanation, he said, do you or does anyone you know make cold calls to try to book meetings? And I said, yeah, sure. We have a team of people that do that at Jellyvision. And he goes, you know how you make calls and you barely connect with people? Maybe you talk to two or three people an hour. I'm like, yeah, that happens all the time. He goes, well, our technology, instead of talking to two people an hour, you talk to 15 people an hour and therefore you book more meetings. Would you like to learn more? And I was like, yes. And then he took out his phone and we actually scheduled the demo. But that I think is what you're getting at, which is, can you relate to some before state that someone has and an after state that you could help them get to? So Harry, let's say now, I'm gonna press you a little harder. Let's say now we are not in the realm of a live conversation and we are now talking maybe about a website or some video that we're making that's non-interactive. And let's role play this again. Now we're gonna go back in time here to TiVo. Let's go back to when TiVo was a new technology and people didn't understand it. New technologies are tough sometimes because they're new. You know, this idea of being able to pause the TV was like new at the time and I would imagine very difficult to explain. And so Harry, I just want to, again, get inside your head. And if you had to explain TiVo to me, this was back when people didn't know what TiVo was, and you couldn't have the advantage of asking me questions, or you could ask a question on a website, obviously, as a way to, you know, just have copy asking a question. But how would you start to think through that?
I think you actually kind of jumped to it right there when you said pause live TV, because what matters when it's marketing is capturing interest. And the way you capture interest is solving for pain. And the pain, in that in this case, people might not have realized how painful it was to not be able to pause live TV. Just like, you know, when I introduced you to Uber, like you didn't realize how painful it was to take a cab. And so
that sort of blew my mind when you did that.
Yeah.
For just as a sidebar, for all of you that don't know, I none of you would know. Harry's the one that introduced me to Uber. I don't know how many years ago. He took out his phone and pressed the button and some car magically picked this up, and it did blow my mind. Yes.
But that's the point, is like, see, what if I could take out my phone and have a car just magically pick me up where I am and then drop me off where I want to go and get out of the car and have it automatically paid for as I leave the car without having to swipe. Like, so the point is, and so TiVo, what if you could pause live TV and rewind it?
Yeah, but I would press you a little bit on this, Harry. Let's talk about what the problem is, right, to your point. Like, what would the problem be? Like, have you ever been watching, would it be something like, have you ever been watching a TV show and a part was coming up that you didn't want to miss and the doorbell rings or your baby's crying and you aren't recording it and you didn't want to miss it? Like, is that kind of more along the lines of talking about the problem first?
Yes. So, but it really depends on the circumstance. Because you've got, so I agree with you that you could begin with the problem, but another example where the problem is immediately understood, you can actually jump to the benefit, because in explaining the benefit, the problem is understood. And that's not true for a lot of B2B software, for example, but it is true. It is true for certain things. So I remember the first time I saw a billboard for an iPod, not an iPhone or the iPad, the iPod. And it was just a picture of the product with some earphones coming out of it that said 1,000 songs in your hand with a little tiny screen. And I don't need them to say, have you ever wished you could not have to carry around a special pack, you know, a holder for 12 CDs to play on your portable CD player? Do you wish it was just all in this one little handheld thing and have 1,000 songs and not enough that'll fit on 12 CDs? None of that needed to be said, because it's as soon as you see that, you understand the problem it's solving. And that was true. That's also true for TiVo. It's also true for Uber. But that's not true for a lot of things, especially like more sophisticated things that are not so obvious. And you do need to start off with, have you ever experienced this pain point before, to set it up?
Yeah, it's almost like a before and after, right? It's like almost like an infomercial. And with your example with the iPod, they jumped right to the after. Like, what's the better future state? And then, as you mentioned with software, sometimes you have to go to the before you go to the after.
Yeah, and it really depends. And it mostly depends on if you really know your audience. Because you could have some super specific, you know, like let's say it's some company that sells to people who maintain swimming pools. And I'm literally making this up, you know, because I remember like jumping in the pools when as a kid, like shortly after the chlorine was put in, just having my eyes burned. So they're like, don't get in the pool after the chlorine's put in. And, you know, if someone had a product that said, you know, what if you could, you know, disinfect a pool without causing, you know, eye problems, you know, immediately or something. I don't know. Some kind of like, so if your audience, if you know your audience and you know that your audience will understand the problem that the product is solving just by identifying the key feature, key benefit, not the feature, key benefit, then you can do that. But if you are going to marketing to an audience that is a little less sophisticated, then you're probably going to need to like do the before state first.
Got it. Great point. Something else I want to talk to you about, Harry, and this is a tricky one, especially in B2B, is you're really good at using humor, and you really believe deeply that you have to entertain people as well as explain things clearly, because if you don't entertain them and you don't engage them, they're going to zone out. So I want to get your take a little bit on humor with regards to B2B, and one of the things that I hear all the time is, unlike B2C, where humor is used all the time, in commercials and ads and billboards. For some reason, when we get into this B2B world, we lose all that and we end up sounding oftentimes like robots. And, you know, my time at Jellyvision, I learned a lot about using humor to be able to engage people and persuade. And wanted to get your take on the use of humor specifically with regards to explaining and B2B communications.
Okay, well, I'll say first of all that there's nothing sacred about using humor. Like it isn't an end to itself in communications. It's a tool that you use, and it's neither appropriate in all circumstances nor necessary in all circumstances. However, if you happen to be in an industry that is super dry, it is an incredibly powerful weapon to be able to make what you are selling stand out. So going to employee benefits conferences, which what we did with Alex, there's not a lot of entertainment value in that world. So the fact that our product was funny and that our company brand used humor really made us stand out. And because the product was funny, it was also more effective because we're dealing with a very, very dry subject that people are afraid of or annoyed by or bored by. And so getting them to smile while they are experiencing the product, and not just smile because it's funny, but smile because it's funny and simultaneously teaching them at the same time. This is called double encoding. And, you know, Sesame Street is a reference everyone knows. Sesame Street's brilliant because little kids can sit there and laugh at the skits with Muppets, but they're learning at the same time. The humor is on task. That's really the best form of humor for communications, that you're not adding a joke in. It's literally the humor is part of what is communicating the core message. So that's a really effective way to use it. That's not easy. You need very talented writers who to be able to do that kind of work. But it really can make you stand out, and it definitely can help engage people, especially in a space where they're not expecting to deal with anything other than very straightforward, dry communication. And I will add that by bringing humor in, and not just humor, but also just kind of conversational, real world dialogue, like real world vernacular, that is likely to improve your communication in and of itself. Just employing that approach of, I'm just talking to you in a real way to explain things, and you drop all of the jargon and try to talk to somebody in a real way. And what I find is, even when you're talking to somebody who has expertise, I mean, obviously the people that we are talking to in the healthcare space, they understand health insurance. Like these people who run benefits departments, they understand health insurance. Nobody gets upset at you by talking in a way that doesn't have jargon, by talking in a way that's clear and simple. Nope. Even if you're talking to somebody who already has some expertise, nobody's going to get mad at you by being clear and simple. It always works for really anybody who's in front of you.
It's a great point. I want to put you on the spot again and get a little crispier with this, just so people can understand.
I'm really,
because humor is such a...
I'm getting, I'm like feeling very on the spot now. This is the third time. The spot is like getting really tight to it. I'm like, I'm feeling the burn. Like.
So, you know, people want to know, like, what exactly does this sound like, humor? Because, I mean, what's kind of safe humor? And is there an example, Harry, that you can think of in Alex or, you know, in any other things that you've ever had to explain, maybe presentations that you've given, where you've used humor, where people could just understand what it looks like, what it might sound like, in the context of a real thing that you were either explaining or maybe part of Alex? We'd love to just, you know, make that a little more crispy for people.
Yeah, I'll give you a really interesting example, because it was something that was totally fine and funny when we first launched Alex 11 years ago. And then sensitivities changed, and we needed to take it out. So one of the questions we ask people is, you know, are you expecting any new members of your family next year? And we worded it that way because it could be someone, they're adopting a child, or they're, you know, having a baby the kind of, you know, standard way, the biological way. And the choices were things like, you know, yes, definitely, and maybe, and then like definitely not. And so if you click definitely not, this little animation of a kind of a stork that had been flying on the screen during the question, a, you know, kind of old fashioned vaudeville cane would come and yank the stork off screen. And it was cute. Maybe 8 years later, 9 years later, we started to get complaints that was potentially offensive to people who are struggling with infertility. And so it's interesting that, you know, that like times change, and, you know, you can do things that work for a while, and then, you know, you have to listen to your audience and make a decision. For sure, there are such circumstances where there's like one person who doesn't like something. I've definitely been in the situation, especially with clients, where we're pitching an idea and using humor in it, and I'm reading through the script, and everybody in the room cracks up at the joke. Everybody's laughing. And then when we get to the end of the script, they're like, that was great. Now that one part with that joke, I mean, that's so fun, but we're going to have to take that out. Well, why? Why? And I'll say, you know, because there are people who just, you know, for this or that or the other reason won't find that funny. And I'm like, well, like who in particular? Like, can you actually think of someone that will not find that funny? And even if they can think of someone who's funny, I'm like, all right, so you guys all laughed. Are you prepared to remove something that's going to create engagement for, you know, 20,000 employees, but potentially be found not funny by four? Like, you gotta like think about the big picture, because you can't please anybody. But in the situation of the stork, we're like, you know what? There's enough people who probably will be put off by that, and so we're gonna pull it.
Awesome tip. I want to talk about one more thing that you've done well in your career, Harry, especially, you know, going back to your You Don't Know Jack days. This is the sort of element of surprise to be able to make people smile. And so, you know, I remember in You Don't Know Jack, if you didn't answer the question or you waited too long or you were playing the game at a certain day or time or it was night, the host would kind of pop up on the screen and say, I'm waiting, or do something, you know, sort of sarcastic that you really didn't expect. So talk to me a little bit about using the element of surprise to make people smile or to entertain or engage.
Yeah, actually one of my favorite moments like that in You Don't Know Jack is when you start up the game and it looks at the clock and the calendar, and the sign-in host, who in the first game his name is Cookie, would see it and say, you know, how many players we got? It's like one, somebody indicated one player and say, wow, dude, you're alone on Friday night at 10 p.m. I'm feeling it.
See, man, that is hilarious. And obviously that's a little bit of an irreverent game show, and you can kind of get away with that. But, you know, you can use this also, you know, on your website. I mean, the example that I always give is I was on a website called Photo Jojo, and it was like, again, it was like 10:30 at night. And there was this chat that came up, said, knock, knock. And it went through this whole knock, knock joke. And I thought it was a bot. And then I typed in, do you want to hear a joke? And the bot came back and said, sure. And it turned out it was actually a real person. And I've told that story a bunch of times. It's just these little Easter eggs, you know, what can you put on your website or in your marketing materials that are, you know, a little bit of the element of surprise? And I think Jellyvision's been really masterful at that with Alex, and certainly in You Don't Know Jack.
But you know what? You know what's the most surprising thing? The most surprising thing is when people do what they say they're going to do. If you as a salesperson, like, actually follow through and do all the stuff that you say you're going to do, if you come up with things for people that are helpful to them, even though it doesn't actually forward the sale to you. If you go above and beyond in terms of your service to them, it surprises them when you authentically remember things about their life that matter and are cheering for them. I think one of the most surprising things is when we are authentically human and our best selves with others. And so it doesn't necessarily need to be this hilarious surprise, although it can be. But I think the reason Jellyvision has done so well in sales is because we hire great people and we tell them to be themselves and be their best selves. Like, be the people that you want to be, that you most want to be with our clients. Be the person who you wish you were talking to on the other end of the line if somebody's selling you.
That is gold. Harry Gottlieb, as usual, you have said it all. If people want to learn more about Jellyvision, how do they do that? Maybe they're intrigued by this benefits counselor. They want to check out the writing. Where do they go? How do they get to this Jellyvision? Do they just type in jellyvision.com? Is it that easy, Harry?
You type in jellyvision.com, and if you're interested in our, I have another company that does the games called Jackbox Games, and you could go to jackboxgames.com and you can learn about both the companies.
Awesome. Harry, thank you so much for being so generous with your time and for teaching us about explanation and entertaining.
It's my pleasure, Josh.